The following is a live presentation of CITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Rita Farkas.
Good evening. In the news this week, some of the stolen artwork from the Museum of Anthropology has been recovered, and Mayor Sam Sullivan loses in the NPA election. And on commentary this week, Phil Caudry discusses CTV's pickup of CBC's iconic Hockey Night in Canada theme song and how much impact the song has had on Canadian culture and identity. We'll have all this, plus your weekend weather forecast, coming up this half hour right here on News 101. Here at UBC, there may be some relief for those at the Museum of Anthropology. Police are reporting that some of the stolen artwork has been recovered from the break-in incident on May 23rd. Missing from the museum are 12 pieces of gold jewelry by famed Haida artist Bill Reed and three Mexican necklaces. The RCMP did a raid in a home in South Burnaby late last night and have reported that other search warrants are being processed today. Last night's raid has recovered some of the missing artwork, though police haven't confirmed which ones or how many. It is unknown whether or not any arrests have been made. Previously, police had reported that the prime suspect in the case was a thief from the Lower Mainland known to target high-end jewelry stores. Now, with a look at more local and provincial news, here are News 101 reporters Charlotte Noble and Peter Otis.
Vancouver Mayor Sam Sullivan will not be running for re-election this fall. The nonpartisan association elected Peter Ladner as their electoral candidate in yesterday's nomination process. Ladner received 1,066 votes of support to represent the ruling party in the mayoral race in November, while Sullivan secured 986 votes. Ladner was first elected to Vancouver City Council in 2002 and re-elected in 2005. Sullivan said Ladner did a good job campaigning and the race was close. He says he is respectful of the democratic process and that Peter Ladner did a very good job. Sullivan was elected to council in 1993 and served as a councillor for 12 years before being elected mayor in November 2005. Before polls opened up yesterday, the two nominees held a short debate. Sullivan talked about homelessness and crime, while Ladner's speech focused on making Vancouver a greener city and how it can compete on the global economic market. Ladner spoke to reporters outside City Hall this morning, saying he supports some of Sam Sullivan's initiatives, such as the Eco Density Policy and Project Civil City, but he will not be supporting the CAST drug substitution program.
Hundreds of photographer hopefuls lined up in the downtown east side last Saturday, vying for a spot in an annual contest. The Pivot Legal Society's Hope in the Shadows calendar is a hotly anticipated event in the low-income neighborhood. The 200 lucky new photographers will receive a disposable camera for the 2009 calendar. Contest organizers say they are well aware that some of the 200 who are given the cameras will simply sell the camera and buy drugs or alcohol, but among the participants, many are excited to have the opportunity to capture what they see around them. Photos taken by the participants are judged by professional photographers who choose 40 of the best photos from nearly 1,000 shots, all from amateur recording of what is happening in the troubled neighborhood. From the 40 chosen shots, the community then votes for the 12 best photos to be featured in the calendar. John Richardson of Pivot Legal Society says the contest touches everybody from the downtown east side. Gertrude Harris, a winner from last year's calendar, says she wasn't trying to win anything. She just wanted to have the photo of her friend pulling bottles from a bin. Now Harris has returned in hopes of taking part in the contest for a second time. Pivot adds an incentive of $5 to those who hand the cameras in with the shots. The theme for this year's contest is, "What do you value in your community?" Richardson says the contest gives outsiders of the area a different way of seeing the community and that it helps challenge stereotypes. He says Pivot sold about $120,000 of calendars in 2007, with much of the funding covering the cost of the contest itself. Each of the 40 photos chosen by judges gets a prize. The grand prize is $500, with several further prizes of $100 and $50.
And here's an update on a story we reported on last week. A group of homeowners in Tawasin have been protesting a power line being built out of fear that the power line will cause health problems to those who live nearby. The proposed power line will bring power to Vancouver Island. The homeowners have been attempting to block the power line construction, refusing construction crews to access their property. In response, this week, the BC Transmission Corporation filed a court injunction against the homeowners. Company spokesman Thuren Hurima said that the company is asking the BC Supreme Court to force the homeowners to let workers access their property. The BC Transmission Corporation claims that they have the legal right of way to access property and force construction.
And as the price of gas increases in Vancouver, more and more people are turning to public transit options to get around. And TransLink is feeling the pressure. Ken Hardy, a TransLink spokesman, expressed concern that the Vancouver transit system may not be prepared for the influx of passengers expected on buses and SkyTrains beginning in the September back-to-school crunch. Even with the added 94 buses and 34 SkyTrains in 2009 as part of TransLink transportation and financial plan, Hardy is concerned that this may not be enough. Hardy says every time TransLink has put out any new capacity in the system over the last 9 years, it has been gobbled up almost as quickly as it hits the road. It's now time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Hi, I'm Kirsty,
and I'm Sheila,
and we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th from 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies, WAGS building right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway, Vancouver's newest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres. Check out biltmorecabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
Come join the free evening gala talks of the 3rd Annual Wall Summer Institute for Research on June 23rd and June 25th. To reserve your tickets, call 604-822-1291. The Peter Wall Institute for Advanced Studies at UBC will bring together invited participants from around the world to explore the implications of a globalized capitalism for the future of agrarian society. On June 23rd from 6 to 7:30 at the Sheraton Wall Center, Jomo Kwame Sundaram from the United Nations will present Washington Rediscovers Agriculture, the Political Economy of the Agrarian Turn. And on June 25th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Freddie Wood Theater at UBC, Emmanuel Wallerstein from Yale University will speak on the return of the peasant. Possible? Desirable? Both of these events are free, but tickets must be reserved in advance by phoning 604-822-1291. Once again, that number is 604-822-1291.
Pleat Community Services Society of BC is calling out for volunteers for the Kid Start Mentoring Program. The Kid Start Mentoring Program matches kids 6 years old and older with an adult mentor. This program is similar to the Big Brothers, except geared towards kids at risk, vulnerable to addiction, crime, abuse, and family crisis. At this moment, there are 243 children and youth waiting for a Kid Start volunteer. To volunteer, or for more information regarding the Kid Start Mentoring Program or Plea Community Services, please visit our websites, www.plea.ca and www.kidstart.ca.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:14. In national news, Liberal leader Stéphane Dion accused the Conservative government of lying to Canadians this afternoon in Parliament. This after the release of the new advertising campaign against the Liberals' carbon tax plan. The Conservative Party began running multimedia ads at Southern Ontario gas stations mocking Dion's plan, the details of which haven't yet been released. In one of them, a cartoon says, quote, Stéphane Dion said he wasn't going to introduce a carbon tax, but now he is, so gas and everything else is going to cost you even more. Yet another flip-flop, better not fall for this trick, quote. With more on this story and other national news, here once again are Peter and Charlotte.
During question period today, Dion said the attack ads are misleading and a lie, adding that instead of taking seriously his calls for a national debate on carbon pricing to fight climate change, the Conservatives offered a cartoon. Dion questioned when the Conservatives will stop insulting Canadians and offer a real plan to tackle climate change. NDP MP Thomas Mulcair criticized both parties, saying the Liberals' plan isn't going to do anything to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and demanded to know when the Conservative government was going to protect consumers from increasing gas prices. Last month, Prime Minister Stephen Harper described Dion's plan as foolish and unnecessary when asked what role the government could play in cushioning the impact of high oil and gas prices on consumers. Harper said that beyond providing some tax relief, the government can have little impact on lowering gas prices. With more national news, here is Charlotte.
A controversial court case has been brought to the court in Winnipeg, raising new questions about free speech and responsible parenting. Two young children, ages 7 and 2, have been seized from their parents on the grounds that they are being raised in an emotionally damaging environment, as their parents seem to be racist. The case raised questions about how far parents can go in teaching their children what they believe is correct. The children were taken by South Winnipeg Social Services after the older child, age 7, came to school with hate-related drawings on her body, allegedly a swastika and a white supremacy slogan. Manitoba Family and Child Services has moved to take possession of the children on the grounds that the parents' conduct may endanger the children's emotional well-being and that the children may be in risk of harm due to their parents' behaviors and associations. With more on this story, here's Peter.
The parents in question were not reachable today and have not outlined their legal position. Manitoba guidelines allow child welfare workers to investigate any situation where there is concern for the safety or well-being of a child, which might include cases involving controversial beliefs. However, University of Manitoba Professor of Social Work Harvey Frankel says whether a judge would remove the children from their parents based solely on the parents' racist belief is another matter. He says that kids grow up in all kinds of situations that you may not agree with, but that this does not necessarily mean that they are in such an unsafe environment that they must be removed by the government.
And now to political commentary with Phil Caudry. This week, Phil takes a look at CTV's pickup of CBC's iconic Hockey Night in Canada theme song.
It's official. CTV has officially saved Canadian culture. As reported by CBC, CTV has acquired the rights to the Hockey Night in Canada theme that has been used on the Hockey Night in Canada show on CBC since 1968. For a whole week, there had been an identity crisis in Canada. Would the song stay, or would it just become a memory of Canadian culture? The negotiations between the song's composer, Dolores Clayman of Vancouver, and CBC had come to an impasse. Lawyers had been brought in on CBC's side to try to make an agreement at the last minute. However, an agreement could not be reached. According to reports, it had to do with financial disagreements between the two sides. While to people that do not understand the importance of hockey to Canadian culture, this culture crisis for Canadians would seem ridiculous. However, Canadians have taken this issue to heart, and many Facebook groups have emerged trying to save the song. To many Canadians, it is Canada's second national anthem, and its storied history is cherished in their hearts. While many may see CTV as the hero by keeping the Hockey Night in Canada song on television, some others will not see it that way. Purists feel that the Hockey Night in Canada song must only be played on Hockey Night in Canada on CBC, as has been standard since the 1960s. Any deviation from this would be considered unsatisfying. These purists will have to accept the truth that the song is under a legally binding agreement between CBC and the song's composer. As a result of these developments, CBC has announced that it plans to launch a new national contest in conjunction with Network Music Group to find a new theme song. Canadians will be invited to write and record an original song for Hockey Night in Canada, with fans and a jury of experts to choose the best new composition. I truly understand Canadians' distaste for the Hockey Night in Canada song not being played anymore on CBC. As a hockey fan and a hockey player, This song definitely resonates with me. It's a shame to see it go from CBC's Hockey Night in Canada every Saturday. However, it is good to know that CTV has picked it up, so the song will still exist. Not unlike the rest of the hockey world, everything's become quite commercialized, and it's no surprise that a song like this came down to financial terms. While this can be an inconvenient truth for many people that love the game, it's a reality, and it's something that we need to accept, that money makes the hockey world go around. It's nice to see CBC give fans the opportunity to write and record an original song for the next Hockey Night in Canada theme. Hopefully it'll lay to rest the old theme and people can move on and enjoy it on CTV. To me, it seems like a good balance has been struck. The song stays, however, CBC doesn't feel like it needs to mortgage its future on a one-minute jingle. The bottom line is that CBC, like every other broadcasting station, has a budget to follow, and as a result, they have a walk-away price. If a composer wants to exploit the fact that they feel they have a monopoly on a song, they can choose to do so, but it's CBC's right to walk away. Who knows, maybe change is good. Perhaps the next song will be even more iconic than the traditional Hockey Night in Canada theme song we're used to. Either way, people will still be watching Hockey Night in Canada on Saturdays and playing the game in their backyards and hockey rinks in their communities. Canada's love for hockey and its dependency on it for its culture cannot be destroyed just because of one jingle being moved from one station to another. For News 101 Commentary, I'm Phil Caudry.
And thank you to Phil for that piece. It's now time for another break, but when we come back, we'll hear some international news from Free Speech Radio News. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And if you look into a book, you might just say, I had fun just like Run, DMC and Jay.
Flash your friends of CITR card and get discounts at Lucky's Comics, RX Comics, Magpie Magazine, People's Co-op Bookstore, and Spartacus Books. Support CITR and pick up your card today.
Join us in a two-day international conference commemorating the 80th birthday of Comandante Che Guevara to discuss and experience the continuing legacy of this internationalist hero. The conference is titled Che Guevara, Thinker and Fighter. Are his ideas relevant for the 21st century? And will take place on Friday, June 13th and Saturday, June 14th, 2008 in Vancouver, British Columbia. The program will include speakers from Cuba and other countries, a cultural evening filled with poetry, music, and multimedia. The conference will take place at the Welsh Hall, 215 East 17th Avenue at Main Street, Vancouver. Please register in advance, or for more information, please call 778-882-5223 or check out the blog, che2008vancouver.blogspot.com. That's che2008vancouver.blogspot.com.
Hi everyone, we're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy!
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com. Or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety. Or you can even join our Facebook group. Welcome back to News 101 in the summer. I'm Rita Farkas coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. In international news, city officials in Cairo are working to put together an Environmental Awareness Day for the very polluted city. With more on this story, here is FSRN.
According to the World Health Organization, if you spend a day in Cairo, Egypt, you'll inhale the equivalent of 20 cigarettes a day, simply breathing. With such high levels of air pollution and a waste management problem on the streets, city officials worked with local and international organizations to co-host an Environmental Awareness Day at a newly built park. The park itself was previously a solid waste landfill. Ayab Batrari has more from Cairo.
Pollution levels in Cairo, Egypt are so high that a local magazine for youth reported that up to 25,000 people die every year from pollution-related diseases, making it one of the most polluted cities in the world. 8-year-old Saifuddin Hisham drew a picture of the pollution problem through his eyes. It was displayed among several other drawings at this year's World Environment Day in Egypt. Saif describes his picture.
There is a car being burnt down here, and smoke coming out of the car is driving by. A stick figure is throwing trash out of the window of the building, and that is why the tree and the sun have sad faces, and a girl on the sidewalk is coughing.
Saif's drawing is an accurate depiction of one of Egypt's biggest problems, air pollution. Many of the taxis and buses running on the streets of Cairo are very old and emit dangerous levels of gas and fumes into the air. On a rare clear night, one can look out from the desert and see the black cloud of pollution that permanently hangs over the city and its nearly 20 million residents. Mifad Zabut works for the German Techno Corporation in Egypt. His firm works with nearly 60 Egyptian companies, encouraging them to find more ways to be environmentally friendly. He says in most cases, firms are encouraged when they see how it is also profitable to be environmentally conscious.
So we are not so much stressing about the effects on the environment, but we'll start to talk about the economic effects they can have. And as side effects, we also have a little bit, we can improve also the environmental issues within the firm or within the companies. But it's the second step. Here it's very important to speak about benefits, economic benefits. If not, they will not follow.
He said the problem, though, is that many people don't see how protecting the environment is each person's responsibility.
But I think here the opinion of the common people is more that environment is not really something that concerns me. That's more the government that has to look for the solutions. So I think we have to change a little bit the attitude and to bring this idea to the people that they are concerned.
In an effort to raise awareness about the problem of pollution and its effects on the environment, Cairo celebrated World Environment Day at a park over the weekend. Surrounded by slums, this park once stood as a large landfill of waste and harmful debris, but was turned into one of the most beautiful open spaces in all of Egypt just a few years ago. Sarah Rafat, one of the many volunteers at Egypt's Environmental Day, explained the importance of hosting the event at the park.
It's an example of how you can turn something that wasn't pretty and what was the source of pollution and mismanagement of waste, and how this can be turned into something that is beautiful and environmentally friendly, and at the same time it's a fun place and it's very healthy to be here. There's lots of greenery and it's open air, there's lots of fresh air.
One of the exhibits showed adults and children how to turn dry rice straw into naturally made and environmentally friendly paper instead of burning it into the atmosphere. The woman showed curious visitors how to grind the rice debris, leave it in water, then use a thin metal drainer to create the outcast of a piece of paper that would be left to dry. At another exhibit, young scientist Ahmed Agrama, a student at Alexandria University, described his creation of a water solar heating device to use in homes.
I think here the opinion of the common people is more that the environment is not really something that concerns them. It's more that the government has to find the solutions. So I think we have to change attitudes a little bit and bring this idea to the people so that they are concerned.
It may be difficult to change the habits of older generations about the need to be more environmentally friendly, but outreach to the younger generation of children may be the key to turning things around in developing countries. This is Aya Batrawi reporting for Cairo for FSRN.
And thanks, as always, to Free Speech Radio News for their piece. Right now, it's 529 and time to take a look at this week's weather forecast. Here is Peter Otis.
It is currently 9 degrees Celsius and raining. They are calling it light rain, but it definitely is not light out here at UBC. But it is supposed to continue until 7 a.m. tomorrow. Between 7 and 8, it's supposed to clear up, and we'll have a cloudy morning, and we expect sunny breaks in the afternoon. The highlight of this week will come on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday with highs of 16 and sunny breaks. And then from Saturday onward, it'll be rain back again, but the temperatures will not dip this time, and they'll stay right around 16 degrees. That's your weather on CITR.
And thank you very much, Peter. That's our program for Monday, June 9th, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Carrie Baptist produced this radio program. For more news, join us Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Rita Farkas thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Tracks coming up next on 101.9 FM CITR.